Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio Success Express Business and Career Show. Every fourth Wednesday, we welcome attorney Ward Heinrichs back on the show. And Ward is based in San Diego. In fact, go to his website, bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. And today he's joining us to talk about PAGA. And he's going to explain what PAGA means. It's Private Attorney General Act. And that I still don't know what that means, but he's going to explain it. And welcome back to the show, Ward. How are you?
I'm doing really well. We've had some warm weather in San Diego, and I guess all across the country, but we're getting through that. You know, we've got a little moisture in the air too, which we don't love here. Just came from Florida, and I'm thinking, boy, it's about the same now, both in Florida and San Diego. But life's good. Things are going well. Thank you.
Good. Well, good. It's good to have you back on. And last time we were talking about legalese, and you touched on this PAGA thing. And now I'm going, PAGA, that we need to just put that into legalese. You've got an article that's up on the site. Everyone just go to blendradioandtv.com and type in P-A-G-A. You'll find it. PAGA. And you talk about, you give everybody an explanation, and you talk about aggrieved employees. So can we go there? Because I am stuck on this legalese. Every time you come on the show, I'm going, dude, what is an aggrieved employee?
All right. Well, PAGA is the Private Attorney General Act. And so I'll start before that just a little bit.
Okay,
Private Attorney General Act. It was passed while Schwarzenegger was in office. So it's been around a while.
Oh, wow.
And it allows private people who are facing violations at work that PAGA covers, and it covers a lot of violations, to bring a claim on behalf of the state. And so they make a claim for the penalties that the state is able to collect for the state itself. What PAGA does for them for doing it is give the employee 25%. But it's divided amongst all the aggrieved employees. Aggrieved are all those who have suffered same or similar workplace violations. Most of it we're talking about, like pay statements maybe, or any type of wage violation usually has a penalty associated with it. So that's mostly of the type of thing you see.
So we can say it's a peeved employee.
No, they're peeved. It sounds like a class action suit.
In a way, yeah.
Well, it's good that you brought that up because it's similar. It's a representative action, and a class action is a type of representative action. Hmm. In a class, you have a plaintiff, maybe, you might have more than one plaintiff, sometimes several plaintiffs, who put their name on the case. So it's Alvarez versus Vaughn. But it's a class action. So Alvarez is representing all the employees who suffered the same thing at Vaughn's. If it's employees, a consumer too, maybe a consumer suffered something at Vaughn's and they're representing the Alvarez there. In that case, we're representing all the consumers who suffered the same wrong. Now you don't want to bring them all in court very often because it's just unwieldy to make all these claims. Maybe they don't even know about it. Alvarez in that case is doing them, everyone else who has suffered the same wrong, a good service. PAGA is very similar because one aggrieved employee, it could be more than one, but again, very often just one, can represent all the employees who have suffered the same violation and weren't able to get into court, didn't even know that it happened, or, you know, for whatever reason, they're not making a claim. But so he's saying, I'm doing it for everyone. So yes, it's what we call representative action.
So they're like the snitch in a good way. Like they're going, okay, we need to stand up, but are they getting an attorney or are they just going to the state? Like, where's this where it says private attorney? I mean, I know I started giggling when we first started to record this because I'm like, I can hear Tina Turner going, where's my private attorney? You know, so what is what's a private attorney? Like, are, so is the person acting like an attorney instead of getting one?
Well, no, great question, by the way, but your guess at what it means is not quite right. What it's saying is, the reason why you say private is the state, which is like public, can bring those claims too. But back in Schwarzenegger's day, they passed this law that said, we don't want just the state bringing these. We're going to allow private people and private attorneys do this, bring these claims for the state. They're complaining there are so many of these violations that we can't cover them all. So we need help. And so what we're going to do is enlist the help of private attorneys and private people.
God, could you imagine if they did this for the IRS?
Oh, wow.
That's
a trippy one. But you see, all right, now, I suppose, well, that's interesting. All right, so I guess you could. You definitely need an attorney with the IRS because their regulations are crazy.
Yeah.
And so much to know. That could be a cottage industry. Interesting. Don't mention it to the U.S. anybody. Government, though.
Yeah, I know, because that's going against government. But this is actually... you're working with the government.
You know why the IRS couldn't do it? Because no one else sees your tax return. Right, that's private.
Yeah.
A different kind of private.
Well, I was kind of thinking about what is going on in the world. Okay, so this is where my brain went, which is kind of off kilter as usual. But, you know, this whole Roe versus Wade thing where people can watch a woman that, you know, needs an abortion or whatever, and they can turn you in. So it's kind of this private, like,
yes, very similar
citizens. And so that's kind of when I was reading about this, IRS, I'm going, if you know someone's cooking their books and you don't like them and they're like maybe competitors in business, you can kind of get one of their employees to snitch on them on the books or something for the IRS. That's where my brain went.
Oh, well, if they have access to the information, yeah, maybe. But, you know, most people aren't going to see someone's tax returns.
But this is really about someone at work that it's so you're helping the state handle these claims, and you can go get an attorney.
Yes.
And so this is kind of a cool thing, right, for the employees. But if you're on the other side, it's not so cool.
Right. And so I've read different articles about it. Some are on the employee side, some are on the employer side. The employee side say, hey, look, there's all these violations going out there or happening out there. And the employers are doing that or have an unfair business advantage by doing it. And so it's just not fair to other employers. And it's certainly not fair to the employees who are suffering this. The employer side says, well, look, first of all, we're not trying to do anything wrong. California regulation is just ridiculously hard. And there's a lot of truth to that. And so sometimes we miss some stuff, but boy, having, you know, people looking for this and they're not the state is just too difficult. You're making our expenses go up more than they should. So there's two sides to that coin. There definitely is.
Wow. Go ahead, Nancy. Sorry.
I was going to say, does it fall into like when you're working for a large corporation and they're nationwide, they have specific hours, but then there's that expectation that you'll work until the job is done and they may or may not compensate you. I'm just thinking back to a company I worked for a long time ago where the expectation was if you didn't finish the amount of work they gave you, that it would be your fault, as opposed to looking at how much work they gave you and how many hours you were expected to finish it in. And so people would be working after hours, but not always getting paid for the after hours. Would that be something?
Well, yes, but you're all right. So there's something we have to separate out here.
Okay.
We're talking about penalties that the state enforces for violations. And so that's not compensation to the employees for working those extra hours. However, back in the day, before class actions got more difficult, often people would file both a class action and a PAGA action for the same violations.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. the state can get its hand in there for a penalty on many of these anyway. And the individuals in the class can get their hand in for the compensation that they weren't given.
Right. Okay. I get it.
Okay. So with this too, so basically the state wants the money. I mean, governments like to make yeah. money off of this stuff too.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah. That's part of it.
That's yeah. a whole part of it. So you're kind of like this tasking. Okay. So we're looking at, like, you will be fined, like we've talked about so many things, like the independent contractor things. We've talked about, like Nancy's talking about, like, if someone is, if you look at the field workers too, you know, California, you guys have a lot of agriculture going, and there's penalties, right, if you force a worker to work in extreme heat or something. So would that be something that could be a PAGA if a worker in the farmlands or out in heat or something, anything that's finable, like you can be fined? That's where we're going.
Yeah, there are limitations. There are really three separate types of PAGA cases, and okay. they're described in three separate provisions of the PAGA law. So one does deal with the OSHA types of violations, but the regulations mm-hmm. are a little different there. And you have to meet certain criteria before you can actually bring those types of cases. And there's another one where they lists a bunch of violations that could be penalties, but they say, well, we're going to give you a chance to fix these before we bring a claim. And then there's a third group that's, again, like wage claims. In fact, it might only be wage claims. And they say, we're not even going to give you a chance on these. You're just going to have to, if they want to bring a PAGA case based on these violations, you don't get to fix them. You just have to suffer whatever the court decides.
Oh. Okay. Wow. So, okay. So something happens. Now, what is going on now? Okay. Wait, let me back up. So this came in with Schwarzenegger, but that was just California, right? So not
this. Yeah, this is just California law.
Okay. So and now, what's
you
going
know,
on?
I don't think there might not be another state that has one. Other states have been talking about passing similar PAGA laws or laws that are similar to PAGA. New York was thinking about doing it.
Yeah,
New York was thinking about doing it.
Washington State, maybe Oregon, who knows?
But now this new case has maybe changed their minds about doing it because now, and we'll get into the details of why that is.
Yeah, tell us about that, because this goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is definitely having a lot of spotlight on it lately. So what's going on with this part of it?
Well, this is called the Viking case. It's Viking Cruises versus Moriana. Mm-hmm. And Moriana was an employee for Viking, and she signed an arbitration agreement. And the Supreme Court has said, we like arbitration agreements. Congress passed a law in 1925, I believe it was, 23, 25, somewhere around then, and has tried to promote arbitration as a way of resolving conflicts and avoiding courts and all the difficulties and formalities of court. So they like to promote it. So when she signed this, she also signed a class action and PAGA waiver. So that means, and the Supreme Court has said that recently too, you know, within the last 4 years, has said, you're allowed to put a waiver in these arbitration agreements and they're enforceable. So she signed one with a waiver saying, you can't bring a PAGA claim. And they decided, well, wait a second, because there had been some case law, before Viking in California that said, no, you can. You're allowed to do this. And really what it's called Ascanian, that case. And it said, no, you can bring a PAGA claim, and it's not preempted by the Federal Arbitration Act. That was the act that was passed in 1925 or 23, whenever it was. So in California, you could do it. And then the Supreme Court basically said, no, you can't. The Federal Arbitration Act is what it is. It preempts. And it also says that if you you're allowed to, if both parties agree, you're allowed to waive these claims. That's the bottom line on it. And there's a little bit more in the background of it, but that's ultimately what they say.
Wow. So how does it go from California to the Supreme Court? I mean, must have been a big push to get it there.
Well, no, we all expected it because the Supreme Court has been supporting the Federal Arbitration Act and saying it preempts a lot of these state claims and state issues.
Doesn't federal law pretty much always preempt state law?
It does, but it has to. They have to be in line. So, you know, just because it's a federal law doesn't mean that it'll always get rid of some law. It has to be a law that has the federal space. The federal took up that space, and so any state law may supplement it possibly, but can't be not aligned with it.
It's like with weed. So marijuana use was, you know, recreational, fine in a certain state, and then, you know, or medicinal, fine. But at one point, federal law said no. I'm behind on weed. How did that happen?
Well, yeah. Okay. So
like federal.
Marijuana is still a class one substance and still regulated under federal law. In California, it's not anymore. You know, there's regulation, obviously, mm-hmm. but you can grow it a certain amount. You can possess a certain amount, mm-hmm. and that's legal in California. But if the feds come in and they say, hey, wait, that violates a federal law, they can do that. Yeah. So it does preempt it to that degree. The issue with marijuana is, well, do they really want to? And they haven't been very aggressive about it.
Yeah, I was just using it like the federal law trumps but the state law. Yeah, if you went over mm-hmm. the legal amount, and I'm gonna cough. Excuse me, talking about weed. Sorry. I had to for a sound effect.
Sounds like you might be allergic to marijuana.
I know, but you know, there's just you don't have to smoke it anymore. I'm just saying, I don't. Don't worry about it. But it's really.
You didn't eat a gummy before you came on air, did you?
No, no.
All right. We're good.
If I had, no. Anyway, what I'm just saying is like the federal law, if you did something really bad and got caught, the federal law would take you out versus the state because the state.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Right.
So if you possess marijuana in California and it's not a state agency that stops you. It's, you know, a military police or, you know, FBI. You violated federal law. Mm-hmm. You're going to prison. Well, you know, not for marijuana, unless it's pounds. But
hey, Ward, do you want a brownie?
Oh, I missed that.
I just said, hey, do you want a brownie? I'm just kidding.
I don't think I want one of your brownies.
No, I don't. I can't bake anyway, so it's all good. We're all good. We're safe. We're safe. We behave. We pet sit as we travel. Good. We don't do these things. But you know, it's just interesting how this federal and state, it always gets into mm-hmm. that. So PAGA is like completely a state thing, not going into cities, like, you know, what we've talked about with employment rates. Like the city of San Diego is different than unincorporated areas. This is completely state, the whole state. Okay, so now yes. Viking Cruises, the Supreme Court votes with Viking Cruises and says, okay, you're fine. So now what happens in California from here on out? I mean, does the law...
Oh, yeah. Good.
What happens
interesting.
Now?
Well, Sotomayor, the justice, said that, hey, this may not be the last word. She wrote what we call a concurring opinion. It was an 8-1 decision, meaning 8 were for it, 1 was against it. But it doesn't mean that all 8 necessarily lined up exactly. And Sotomayor is one who did not line up exactly and wrote her own concurring opinion. And in it, she suggested, well, maybe the courts in California or the legislature can kind of fix the law so it won't have this same problem that we have decided you have, and then it won't be a problem at all. So that I'm really certain that the legislature will take this up. I'm not sure if the California courts will just decide it in a different way. But there is some ground to do that.
Yeah,
there is. I mean, another decision that's decided on slightly different basis might work. Because, all right, so Iskanian said that, hey, the individual PAGA claim, meaning the person who has their name on the complaint, cannot be separated from the PAGA claim for the rest of the people. And so that's the California Supreme Court saying that. And so the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, that's wrong. They can be separated. And when the individual case then has to go to arbitration, and once it's there, there's no one's there to represent this group anymore. So it's gone. Now, if the standing were standing requirements were different, if the court said, well, maybe, now I'm making stuff up now. I don't know what they may say, but if they say, well, maybe they don't have to be together, but the standing of this one person who's been shunted over here isn't required. Maybe someone from the outside, something like in Texas where they see an abortion or think an abortion might happen, then they go sue. Same thing, someone on the outside who has no dog in that fight says, I will bring this claim on behalf of all these people. Maybe a labor union guy who isn't. So I'm going to bring this claim for these people. And I have no claim myself, but California said I could do it. Just like Texas says someone else can go sue this other person who they have one-on-one
beef. Aiding and abetting, you know.
But it does kind of sound like a...
fix it. You know, I'm making this up. Maybe.
And it sounds like how a union would be formed if the workers feel they have no voice.
Yeah, no, I think union would be the perfect type of entity to take that up. But, you know, would be in a good position to lead that kind of case.
Yeah.
But the courts would have to, I think, change the standing rules. And we'll see. And what I was really suggesting, I guess, is more of a legislative fix, because they'd have to change how the law works now that way. That the courts couldn't fix it that way. But the legislature could.
It feels like a chess game. Like, would the California Supreme Court go after the U.S. Supreme Court? Like, would they duke it out? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that'd
be interesting.
No, the California Supreme Court has had laws that have gone up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they haven't done well. We might be the state that's most likely to have something overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, especially because it's a conservative court.
Exactly. Right
liberal.
Now, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not going to. I'm thinking this now is not the time. It's a very interesting time. I mean, it's wild.
I really don't like the idea of Supreme Court judges being lifetime. I don't think they should. Nobody should have a term that long.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think there's two sides of that coin. One is if they're a lifetime, then they're less likely to take sides that they don't believe principally in because they're trying to get elected. So, you know, that may happen. I mean, come on, it happens. And so there's that. So there's, you know, lifetime. That's really why they instituted it originally was lifetime. Lifetime on the bench means you're less likely to be influenced by politics, essentially. but on the other hand, maybe we need, I think you got a good point. It's not a bad thing to have more turnover, maybe.
Yeah, because when you get when you get all of the judges from one political party, they're not really representing everybody in this country.
No.
End of story. That's it. They're not representing.
Well,
if they're really all from one political party, then and their lifetime, you're kind of stuck. You know.
I think we need younger people. Period. Because things have changed so much in the world.
They would be in for even longer.
I mean, some of these people that are in there are don't even. I mean, the internet was formed while they were still there. You know what I mean? Think about it. I mean,
things are different.
So I wonder about that. You know, so you get these progressive bills and laws, and then it goes up to here's what's been there for ancient times. You know, it's like, it's kind of like this, the battle of ages, really, if you think about it, what's going on in this country. Well,
I feel that with the Supreme Court. When you look at a lifetime Supreme Court judge, and so you get somebody who's really elderly, and so they go to their secretary and say, look this up on the computer because they don't know how. That's where my mind goes. When they've been in office so long that they're not computer savvy, and they have other people that tell them stuff and they just accept it. I don't know.
We're gonna get in trouble. If you don't want older people running the country, I think you're gonna have a hard time with that.
I don't mind older people, but I don't think for a lifetime.
Oh seems... boy, I know. It just feels like someone's gonna be there until they. It's hard because then look at Ruth Ginsburg, and she was a badass, man.
Yeah,
look at her. Cool, she really was. I mean, so it's kind of a different thing.
She it was just on for a long time.
Yeah.
She was trying to put off the inevitable until Trump was out of office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was thinking, is it fair to other people who might want to be a Supreme Court judge? I don't know.
But this is to me so fascinating about the California Supreme Court versus federal Supreme Court. And now, okay, so Viking, so that's
let me say one more thing about that. When it's the only time that the federal Supreme Court gets involved with the California law is if there's preemption. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. It would be only preemption. And very often, and I've seen this from the Ninth Circuit fairly regularly, where they go, this is the California law that's put in the federal courthouse. And that happens usually because you have parties who are in different states. And so the feds say, if that happens and there's some other qualifications, then you can bring this case in federal court. And very often the person who's out of state wants to do that. And there's a bunch of reasons why, but that's kind of the trend. And so when that case comes up to the Ninth Circuit, they go, this is California law. We don't know what the California Supreme Court means by this law. We see that there's a couple different jurisdictions that have decided, appellate jurisdictions that have decided it differently. And so we're going to ask the Supreme Court what they mean. So I see that quite a bit. So again, if it's really just California law, no one else can touch it. That's the Supreme Court. That's California Supreme Court's area of expertise and influence. The only time you really, don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say this. The only time you have U.S. Supreme Court saying, no, you're wrong, California, is if there's a preemption issue. The federal law preempts, therefore you're wrong.
Wow. So take that. Like, you know what I mean?
But what happens from here?
I mean, because
if the federal law wasn't stronger than state law, we wouldn't be a country.
That's like government shutdowns. A state can't say no to a government shutdown, right?
Well, we tried that with the Confederacy before we exactly. Well, I'm not talking about the Southern Confederacy. Yeah. I'm talking about the Confederacy that existed before we had the federal government. And essentially the central government had no power. They had to beg for money. They couldn't tax it. And so then they said, oh, this isn't working. If we're really going to be a United States, we need to have a stronger federal authority. So that's why historically it happened. And it makes sense. I mean, we will not have it if it doesn't have power.
Yeah. And military wise, when you think about globally, we need
that. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, from military background, and then like we wouldn't have national parks.
Well, you know. Now, there is an interesting side note to that, maybe. Back before the Civil War, I've read this in many different places. Most people would say, I am from the state of whatever, Virginia, Massachusetts, whatever it was. And they really thought of themselves as citizens, generally thought of themselves as citizens of that state, not really the United States. And after the Civil War, they say the lexicon started to change and people started saying, I'm a citizen of the United States. Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm bringing that up is, I suppose you could have developed it differently and said, well, each state is its own entity for foreign to deal with foreign powers too. And so you could have something more like that.
Oh, that'd be a mess.
But we think it's weird now because we didn't develop it that way. And we don't say, well, I'm a citizen from Virginia. We say, I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm an Okie from Muskogee.
No, but I mean, if you think about it, so let's say some little state decides to declare war on some power in Europe. And none of the states around it want to do that, but they're sure going to feel it if there's a war.
But this is like Brexit, right?
You can't do that. I mean, I know Texas always wanted to be its own deal, and it still looks like they want to be their own deal. But they're like at least on a border. But if it was a country state right in the middle of the United States, that would be really awkward.
Iowa goes after Germany.
You know, because think about it, you know, so let's say Putin wants to bomb, you know, Kansas. It's going to affect a lot of the states around Kansas.
And they're going to all have to get together, so no matter how. Yeah, I know so that over the last 20
years. I don't think we really have much of a choice, but to
the last 20 years, people in this country, if there's been this thing about us going back to states, you know, like states running like countries and.
Yeah,
you know, but
right, we're used to, you know, for the last 150 years, almost 200 years, we're really used to being a citizen of the United States. So we think of ourselves as one big unified pot, but it didn't necessarily have to develop that way. And I'm saying before the Civil War, it really wasn't quite like that. Yeah. Now the federal government did have a lot of power because they granted it to.
See, we can be like Europe.
Yeah, this
but
is
we could have 50 different states that do their own negotiation.
Hawaii would be happy.
Yeah, well, and you talked about Texas wanting to secede from the Union. California might. I mean, we have people in California who form groups who are saying, let's secede.
But California is at least not in the middle of the country. I think when they
when you're coastal,
would be so weird
military wise.
Well, we're not used to it, but I put it out there because I think at one time in our history that could have been possible.
It could have, and people do bring it up. It's like DC becoming a state or being part of Maryland or something. When there's all of that, and I think people are testing it because there is kind of a wakey people, what do we want? And we get so complacent as society. Mm-hmm. And so it is about thinking what do you want individually and in this country or state, you know? And so it's an interesting time. And I think that's a cool conversation to be had by a lot of people it's been something except for military and things like that. I mean, California secedes. What you guys are on the front lines? Like, look at the nuclear war. Like, when you know, California has bunkers all up and down the nuclear thingies, missile thingies, all the way up the coastline. You know, you guys are on the front lines. And Washington State, when Putin starts stuff, I'm like, dude, Russia. I can see Russia. No, you know what I mean. So I think there's a. We're so changed since the Civil War, but that conversation
we really think
is still
ourselves
out there.
As unified in the United States as we certainly think as the federal government as the trumping power in the United States. Yes,
it is the way it is. But it's so interesting. So this Viking case, too. I'm going to get us back on track. We've done really good.
Go ahead.
But going back to this, so where do you think? Where are we now? Today with this Viking case and so is PAGA out the window completely, or are we still waiting for more? Where are we now with PAGA in California?
All right, I'm going to make a prediction, and most of my predictions have been right when I've made them on
because
your show.
Ward is aggressive and he's smart. There you go.
Well, thank you. I think the legislature will do something and change the law in a way sort of like what I've described. That could be an example. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think they're going to try to fix it so that next time it goes in front of the Supreme Court, it won't be a problem.
Oh, okay.
That's what I think.
Well, that makes sense because, I mean, some of our laws are really, really archaic and they do need to change up. Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, here it's the Supreme Court said the way it's drafted now, the Federal Arbitration Act trumps it and doesn't allow it, or actually allows you to waive the claim in an arbitration agreement. That's what it allows. But again, Justice Sotomayor said, well, there may be ways to fix this. And so, you know, maybe the California courts will fix it. Maybe the legislature will fix it. But there may be ways to fix this so that it's not a problem anymore. And be interesting to see.
Cool. There's always something going on. I can't believe how many things have just over the last couple of years of just like bing, bing, you know, all these new changes and, you know, so it's going to get interesting. I'm looking forward to your end of year, you know, what's coming for 2023, you know, that's going to be, PAGA might be on there, you know. It's
Well, they're out of session. Oh, no, they're going to be out of session, I think, by September. I shouldn't even say that. I'm not sure. But I know they don't have much time this year to do it. That's the bottom line. So I don't think we'll see it for next year. I think it'll be 2024 before you see anything.
Oh, wow. Wow. Cool. Well, Ward, thank you so much. I know you're going off to Alaska to have a good time.
Hey, I am. But before we go on, I want to say employers really should change their arbitration agreement, or should have an arbitration agreement with a PAGA waiver in it now. Because for now, that's the law. So I think it makes sense for employers to do that.
Yes.
Now we can talk about Alaska.
Okay, cool. Well, I think we should talk. We should, I know next segment, next month in August, when you come back from your vacation in Alaska, that we'll go back to legalese, because we have a lot more. I think we'll always have legalese words that I can't even spell legalese, but no, I'm kidding. But we'll do that next. But I think we should do a show on arbitration, you know, the actual, your clauses that you're talking about, how to do that would be a really these contracts and these documents is a good thing to do, you know.
I agree, and that I'm just trying to think of how long that'll take. We'll work on it. Maybe we can make it a whole show. It's you know, you're really talking about one provision, a couple paragraphs kind of thing. So it's we'll have to talk
actually everybody just call show. Ward.
Yeah, just call me. I'll help.
Yeah, bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. See, it's imprinted in my mind. But listen, have a good time in Alaska. We can't wait to catch up with you.
Let us know if you can see Russia from there.
Yeah.
Well, if I see Russia, I'll let you know.
Okay.
And I'll bring back a lot of fish. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, have a good time. And everyone, Ward's here every fourth Wednesday. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. His article on PAGA is up on blendradio and tv.com right now. Thanks so much, Ward.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.